instead of what do you remember or what struck you from the previous class, what about the whole presentation including the previous class? One point that struck you deeply. Merle, did you want to say?
Yes. There are a couple of points, but I think one point to start with is that the smaller you become, your dependence on Krishna grows bigger.
Mm.
So it's a nice relationship there.
Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Yes.
Saranda only to Krishna. Yes.
Only to Krishna. What does surrender to Krishna mean? Yes, Paul.
To devote yourself to Him.
Devote yourself to Him, yes, and depend on Him. To serve Him in a mood of complete dependence. Thank you. Anyone else remember something or from the? Yes.
That even though we forget our relationship with Krishna, or whether Krishna ever forgets us, or...
Did I say that?
It was there in Prabhupada's, in relation to Arjuna, and Prabhupada mentions, and others, Arjuna and others. So I guess the others are us.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yes?
Well, just like a child that is fully confident in the parents, there's surrender to the parents. When we surrender to Krishna, then we're free from all anxiety.
Yes. Yeah, very important. Yes,
Prabhu. Prabhupada explains like one is to accept Shastras as authority.
Yes.
Even though one may not accept, Prabhupada gives the example of a mother is the authority of a father.
Yes. You have to accept who your father is on the authority of the mother. Yes, thank you. Yes, Manisha.
Just like when you board a plane, you're going to the destination, but you're not there yet, but already your consciousness can be there.
Yes.
So you're not there for a reason to which you will, but you're just trying to take our consciousness from there.
Very important to stay off the plane, because in the middle of the flight, if we get off the plane, there can be difficulties. Yes?
Krishna's lifting Govardhana Hill might be a story to you, but it isn't a story to Prabhupada.
Yeah. And do you remember what else he said at that time?
That you have a father might be a story, you might be just a story.
Yeah. And Prabhupada also said about the Krishna consciousness movement, that Krishna is still doing this. He's still doing wonderful things. Otherwise, how is the Krishna consciousness movement spreading? If we think that it's spreading by our power, then we're really limited in how much we can assist in spreading it. So that's, in preaching, this is the main thing, practically speaking. Or doing any service for Krishna, it's depending upon Him consciously and with great devotion. As we work very hard, as Arjuna had to draw the bow, he had to pull the arrows from his quiver, but his dependence was on Krishna. Anyone remember anything else, or anything else struck them? Yes.
The Acharyas have a boat.
Yeah.
Can take us across this material ocean.
And what is that boat?
Well, that would be their teachings, I guess.
Yes, Aravinda Pool.
All those who do not surrender to Krishna are arrested.
And the boat is the lotus feet of Krishna. In other words, taking shelter of Krishna and His service. And all those who don't surrender to Krishna are?
Rascals.
Yes. That's a heavy one, especially when I first wake up in the morning. Yes.
The other thing about the boat of Krishna's lotus feet that the Acharyas cross on is that even though they get on it and cross, the boat is still there for others to yes. board.
Yeah. The methodologies. Yeah, very good. Did you have... Nothing struck you?
Oh yeah, one point actually.
That's what we asked.
What Krishna gives, he doesn't take back.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
My mother once said to me that if Krishna wants me, he'll come and get me. And I should have said to her that when what Krishna gives, he doesn't take back.
If Krishna wants you, to you she said that,
yeah.
he'll come and get you, or her.
Her, yeah. Myself.
Sometimes when we're staying in Vrindavan, we meet people who live in Delhi, and we say, why don't you come to Vrindavan? You're so close. Why don't you come to Vrindavan? And they say, when Krishna wants me to come, I'll be there. So I finally figured out how to counter that. I said, well, why don't you make an experiment? Why don't you get on the train and come to Vrindavan and see if Krishna stops you? You, in other words, you act on your desire. Okay, let's move on to the end of the... Oh no, we won't move on to the end of the morning walk or the end of the presentation quite yet, because first there are some very wonderful verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and one from the Ramayana, actually, about surrender that were very striking to me, and I wish to show them to you. Here is one. O my Lord, this is Lord Brahma's prayers. O my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries being influenced by your external energy. So this is indirectly about surrender. Because we're holding on to Maya very tightly, which means the desire to enjoy the self-centeredness that we have. And then we wonder why we're suffering and not becoming Krishna conscious. So what has to end, even to get out of the entanglement of material existence, what to speak of developing love for Krishna, is this self-centered pettiness where we think that my life, the universe, it is meant for my enjoyment. And when we think like this, practically speaking, we end up being servants anyway. But we serve masters that are inappropriate for us to serve. And really, we must turn to Krishna. And turning to Krishna means surrendering to him, placing ourselves under his protection with great devotion and faith, and developing a serving mood to him. Now, this is a little later in the Bhagavatam, in the 13th chapter. This is just when the Swayambhuva Manu has been created, and he's agreed to populate the earth, and then he needs a place to be the progenitor of mankind, Manu. So Brahma points him towards the earth and notices that the earth has fallen into the Garbhadak ocean. And then he thinks, while I have been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated. What does inundated mean? Yes.
Fully covered?
Yes, flooded or fully covered, very good. By a deluge, tremendous amount of water and rain, and has gone down into the depths of the ocean. What can we do? What can we do who are engaged in this matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. So when we're over here, not knowing how to proceed due to the difficulties of material existence, we should remember this over here. Brahma's creation was his service to Krishna. And sometimes, as it happens, when we're doing something in life, things go far beyond our control. And that's terrifying for a conditioned soul. Sometimes it may happen with a health crisis, or sometimes it may happen just with our work or our business or family things. It's out of control and it's terrifying. But really, actually, accurately speaking, the thought that we are controlling things is illusion. It is Maya. Actually, it's Krishna who's in control. He is the Parameshwar. We are just little. How could we, who are so tiny, insignificant jiva souls, actually control anything? We can't even control our bodies, our minds. Let me say that again. We can't even control our bodies. What to speak of our minds? And we're the controller. And if we're going to become completely in anxiety when things are out of our control, how much anxiety are we going to be in? Because things are in fact always out of our control. They're never in our control. What to speak of the 6 billion human beings in this world all thinking they want it to be under my control individually. So Brahma here is setting such a good example. Something has happened, not favorable to him or what he wants to do or his service, but he depends on Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata. This is the, practically speaking, Srila Jiva Goswami says, this is the definition of surrender. And here's from Prabhupada's purport. Very simple and short. Purport. This is the entirety of Prabhupada's purport. He says, what does he say?
Devotees of the Lord.
Slowly.
The devotees of the Lord, who are all confidential servants.
Intimate servitors.
Are sometimes perplexed. In
what does perplexed mean?
Are confused.
Yes.
In the discharge of their respective duties. But they are never discouraged. They have full faith in the Lord. And he paves the way for smooth progress of the devotee's duty.
Another verse.
My dear sons, the Lord is the controller of the three modes of nature and is responsible for the creation, preservation and dissolution of the universe. His wonderful creative power, Yoga Maya, cannot be easily understood even by the masters of yoga. That most ancient person, the personality of Godhead, will alone control rescue. What purpose can we serve on his behalf by deliberating on the subject?
What faith! What deep taking shelter of Krishna! He will come to our rescue. And there's no use even deliberating about it any further. What does deliberating mean?
Planning, like, or worrying about and trying.
But what does deliberating mean?
Thinking about it.
Thinking about it. Trying to discern it by our own, by one's intellectual ability. So there is no value very often. And what does the mind tend to do? How many times when you're in anxiety about something, or you're worried about something, or you want something, what does the mind tend to do?
Deliberate on it.
Once? just goes again and again, thinking about it again and again, going over the same thing again and again and again and again. And where do you go? Just around and around and around, like a little guinea pig on one of those little things. That's what the mind does. But this is a different way of dealing with it. And what is the result of that thinking about something, worrying about it, being in anxiety about it again and again and again and again and again and again and again? What is the result on the consciousness? Huh?
More worry.
More worry. You're just getting anxiety. And you feel terrible. Yeah, go ahead. Let's see if we can fix it. I can't. Well, that's good. Thank you. And this is Brahma speaking. I believe this is when Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were within the womb of Aditi, and the whole universe became disturbed, and the demigods went to Lord Brahma, and they complained, "Help us, help us, help us!" And he said, "This one, it's got to do with Krishna, and he's the only one who can help us out of this circumstance." And then, after taking shelter of Krishna, not worrying about it anymore. That's depth of Krishna consciousness. And the mind's going to tend to want to do that, and just to say, "No, I'm not going to worry about it anymore." And then you have to start worrying about the fact that you're still worrying about it, even though you're not going to worry about it anymore. The mind is very tricky, so therefore, you should chant Hare Krishna a lot. Really, Mahaprabhu recommended Kirtaniya Sadahari. What does that mean? Arvind, Prabhu, do you know what that means? Kirtaniya Sadahari?
No.
Could someone help Arvind?
Always chanting the holy name.
Yeah, always. Sada, always, continuously. The best medicine, actually speaking. It's definitely better. Another verse. This is actually more than one verse. It's going to be how many verses?
Three.
Yes, from the 11th canto. This is the Uddhava Gita. Uddhava is speaking to Krishna. He says, "O Lord of the universe, O form of the universe, please explain to me that process of knowledge which automatically brings detachment and it brings direct perception of the truth, which is transcendental, and which is traditionally among great spiritual philosophers." In other words, they have that. He wants that process that is going to give him the realization of the absolute truth that the great transcendentalists have. "This knowledge, sought by elevated personalities, great souls, it describes loving devotional service unto your lordship." The verse says Bhakti Yoga. "My dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death, and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar." Now, what's funny about that example? It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful verses. But what's funny about this example? What is the shelter? Again, the lotus feet. Yes.
The raining umbrella.
It's a raining, because usually you go to an umbrella when it's raining, right? And what do you want the umbrella to do?
Shelter from the rain.
Shelter from the rain. But this umbrella, when you get under it, so an umbrella is a shelter. But this umbrella It stops the rain of material miseries, but a different kind of rain comes down from this umbrella. And it, what kind of rain is it? Huh? Yes. Doesn't that sound very tasty? A rain of delicious nectar upon the soul. And look over here. My dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death. Very interesting, because the path that we're treading on is the path of birth and death. Or rather, at this point, it's death, then birth, and then death, then birth, then death, then birth. But it's not a pleasant journey on this path either. The end is death, and the journey leads one to being tormented, because we have so many desires and they're always unfulfilled. And then, even if we have the most pleasant life, very peaceful, the ones that we love the most, they will have to reap the fruit of death and disease and old age. That's a torment even for the peaceful. And those who are successful in this world, you know what Prabhupada would say? If I started the sentence, and those who are successful in this world, what would Prabhupada would say?
Yeah. Who
is successful in this world? Everyone's going to die. What is the success? The scientists have given us so much. What is their progress? What they have done? Have they cured death? But they've given us projectors and computers and fans and what they have done. Uddhava continues to speak to the Lord. O Almighty Lord, please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity, the perfect mood for surrender. If we're proud, how can we depend on Krishna? If I think I am strong, I am intelligent, I always get out of, I've used whatever abilities I have, my cleverness, my this, my that, to get myself in this life out of every difficulty that has come to me. And then at some point of life, something happens that's completely out of our control. And we try all the tricks that have gotten us through so far and nothing works and it's out of control. That's practice for death, practically speaking. And then the pious soul will be like Uddhava. Please, it's out of my control and I've recognized it this time. Please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity. Hopeless in the sense that I have no other hope than your kindness and mercy. If we can somehow or another maintain this mood and be fully confident of Krishna's mercy, as Lord Brahma was confident of Krishna's mercy. A humble, hopeless, fully dependent, confident mood. Then our relationship with Krishna will grow and grow and grow with great devotion and love. So therefore Mahaprabhu said, Trinara Pisani Sena, Tarora Pisani Sena, Manina, Manadena, Kirtanaya Sadahari. Because in that mood of humility, then one can chant the holy names constantly, because we have no choice, because we don't have any other shelter. As long as we think we have another shelter, we can't take shelter of Krishna. So, O Almighty Lord, And how could we take shelter of him unless he was almighty, unless he possessed all power? Please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity who has fallen into the dark hole of material existence. And what also is in that hole? The snake of time has bitten him. In spite of such abominable conditions, this poor living entity has tremendous desire to relish the most insignificant material happiness. I'm still trying to enjoy this material world despite the fact that I've fallen into a hole that's dark and there's no way out and there's a big snake in there. And he's already bitten me and injected me with his poison. That means in time, my certain death. And there I am in that condition and I'm trying to enjoy. That is called insanity. Please save me. This is how foolish I am, he's saying, Uddhava saying. Please save me, my Lord. How? By pouring down the nectar of your instructions, which awaken one to spiritual freedom. How interesting. Awaken one to spiritual freedom. That means they give us our choice. That we can depend on Krishna. We can develop love for Him. Otherwise, people don't really know. They have no freedom. The freedom isn't which brand of cigarettes to buy. That's not freedom. The one time Prabhupada was, he had gone to chant in Tompkins Square Park. What city was it? Yes, it was New York City. And when he came back with the devotees, some guests, people who had heard the chanting also came back, and Prabhupada gave a strong lecture. And in that lecture he said, if anyone thinks that they are free, it does not speak well for their sanity. It means they are crazy if you think you're free. And one girl at the end stood up and said, I'm free. I have freedom. And Prabhupada's reply is, are you free to stop growing older? Can you stop? Say if you, how old are you now?
Ooh. I'm 13.
13. If you, do you like being 13? Yes. Okay. Can you decide I'm not going to become 14 or 15 or 16 or 17 or 18? No. It's forced. These things are forced on us. I might not like being 60, but if I think it's better than being 62 or 65, it doesn't make any difference. I can't stop the forces, the unstoppable forces of material nature. So please be merciful upon me. Please save me by pouring down the nectar of your instructions, which awakens one to actual freedom, the freedom to beg Krishna for his mercy and take shelter of his instructions and his service. Confirmed by a sneeze in the back. Thank you. From the Ramayana. This is Krishna. Everyone, let's chant this together. Sakrideva prapanoyas tavasmiti chayakshate abhayam sarvatasmai tadam netad vratam mama. Please read it, someone.
The one surrenders unto me sincerely, saying, my Lord, from this day I am fully surrendered unto you. I always give him protection. That is my vow.
There's a wonderful story behind this. This is spoken by Lord Ramachandra when Bibhishan, he was fighting with Ravana. Ravana wouldn't listen to his advice. He said, just give back Sita. Give back Sita, otherwise the whole Rakshasa race is going to be destroyed. You've acted improperly by taking her. Give her back to Ram. And instead, he was thought of as an enemy. And he, using his powers, went high into the sky with some of his followers and they went to Rama's camp and stood in the air where all the monkeys and the armies were below. And Bibhishan said, we've come to take shelter of Ram. And the different monkey warriors, the head, I think Sugriva even, he said, we have to be very careful. I think he's a spy. He's a spy. He's going to find out our strengths or weaknesses, then report back to Ravana. We should capture him and kill him immediately. And everyone, and they asked Hanuman, and everyone had different opinions what to do with Vibhishan. And Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, he said that even if he's come to do some harm, he's taking shelter of me. And if one surrenders unto me sincerely, saying, even one time, saying, my Lord, from this day I am fully surrendered unto you. And then Ram said, I always give him protection. So he is surrendering, and we must protect him. I will protect him. We immediately welcome him into our camp because he's surrendering. And all the monkeys became ecstatic when they heard Ramachandra's promise about Vibhishan, because they saw the quality of the protection, of the shelter that they themselves had taken in Lord Ram. This is my vow, he said. He's come to me for shelter, and I must give him shelter. Kaunteya Pratijani hi name bhakta pranasyati. O Arjuna, declare it boldly, Krishna says. My devotee shall never perish. Now, those were some verses on the glory of surrender to Krishna. Now, the end of the Bhagavad Gita shows the result of surrender. Because surrender means that we take some service for Krishna's pleasure and depend upon him for protection. We do something for Krishna. It ends in something practical. What was the surrender that Arjuna was requested to make by Krishna? He didn't want to fight. And what was the surrender that he was asked to make?
Fight.
So surrender only isn't an internal attitude. It ends in some practical service. But practical service isn't just an external activity, it is based on the internal attitude of surrender. You are mine, you are my master, I am yours. Please accept this service that I am attempting to perform for your pleasure in such a way that you will be pleased. That's the internal attitude that is reflected in the activity. So Krishna requested Arjuna to surrender and fight. Mam anusmaram yudhyacha, that you should think of me and then do your duty for my pleasure. So what was actually the end? The final verse of the Bhagavad Gita explains this. This is the conclusion, because Dhritarashtra was asking Sanjay, who was situated in Hastinapur, and they were asking, he was asking Sanjay, what's going to happen? What is going to be the result of the battle? And this is the final conclusion spoken by Sanjay. He says, everyone, please chant this. Yatra yogeshwaro Krishna, yatra pato dhanodara, tatra sri vijayo bhutir juvanitir matir mama. So Sanjay's concluding words in the Bhagavad Gita is, wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, And wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. So in other words, he was saying, your sons are going to lose. And because wherever Krishna is, even though his armies are on the other side, where Krishna is, and his surrendered devotee Arjuna, who is using his specific ability of archery in Krishna's service, there will be victory. And when there is victory, there is also loss. The victory will belong to the Pandavas, and the loss will be yours. So this is the end, the final result of Arjuna's surrender to Krishna. There is victory for the Pandavas. And here is Prabhupada's purport. I'll read it. The Bhagavad Gita begins with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons. Javtrini, why don't you read it? Victory of his sons.
He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjay told the king, "You're thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. The living entity in his original position is pure spirit. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun and the living entities, the sunshine. Because the living entities are the marginal energy of Krishna, they have a tendency to be in contact either with the material energy or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between the two energies of the Lord. And because he belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, he comes under the direct order of Krishna. Thus he obtains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency.
He obtains his normal condition. That's Srupena Avastita. This is what liberation is. Mukti hitva anyatta rupam srupena avastati. He attains his normal position, which is taking shelter of the internal energy of Krishna, which completes the living entity and awards him the highest ecstasy, the true taste that we are longing for. Oh, yes, this was all then. Now, that is the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the result of surrendering it. Again, surrendering isn't just a mental attitude. It is a mental attitude that is the essence of an activity of service, of practical service. Now, this is a little tricky electronic maneuver. Because we'll hear the end of the morning walk. We've heard the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Now we'll hear the end of the morning walk. But as soon as we hear the end of the morning walk, then we have to allow bring it back to computer sound. Okay? The morning walk, the ending is quite short actually.
So you are going to measure your calculator? 10,000 men. Now, I wanted to construct this building with bricks.
Yes, but you have to get some slabs.
Slabs? So you still use it like 10,000?
No, you do it with money. There's no slabs.
Not money.
Nice.
Mortar, I mean.
Yeah.
Sand and cement. No, gasoline also.
No plastic.
No, gasoline also.
Yeah.
But
it comes to about 8,000 bags. Mm. Imagine the whole land like that. Mm. full Hindu stories.
I don't want to use this ayah.
No, you don't.
Simply this break.
Yeah.
In that way. You still require 10,000?
We require about 8,000 as a special to apply to 10,000. If we only need 5,000, please take that. They will give us that alignment.
He is godless and we have to fight against the sea of things. We have to fight with the whole Lord. Single language, double language doesn't matter. If Krishna is there, then you get down. Fortune for single language.
Very simple, but very heavy. See how immediately on this walk discussing so much philosophy, this rascal, that rascal, against the soul getting entangled in karma, against the soul getting entangled in jnana, and trying to become one with the Lord, then immediately Prabhupada gets practical. Because there's a service he wants done. Now they are discussing in Vrindavan in 1975 the building of, it seems to me they're talking about the guest house at Krishna Balaram Mandir. Raise your hand if you've been to Krishna Balaram Mandir. Yes, almost everyone. And there's a guest house there and they're talking about constructing it. And it was so difficult in this time period to even get cement, concrete. You had to apply to the government and of course you had to use influence to get it. So immediately Prabhupada begins to get practical with his managers there. Sarab, who was the designer, the architect of that wonderful building, and he's putting them through his paces. How many bags, because he doesn't want anyone to waste any of Krishna's money. Talking about the plastering into every detail from philosophy to practical surrendered service. In one moment. And it was all based on his desire to please Guru Mahaprabhu and C.C. Radha and Krishna Balaram, Gonatai. So Prabhupada's talking about don't use this iron. He wanted the guest house just out of brick, no reinforced concrete or anything like that. And Sarab is Prabhu is responding. He's responding. And Prabhupada's being very careful about using Krishna's money and not wasting even one paisa. 8,000 bags. He says we're going to get 10,000. Do you need 10,000 bags? I want it made out of brick. We're not going to make it out of reinforced concrete. And you know, when Prabhupada is putting this practical pressure, it was very difficult. And Sarab did very, very well. So then Prabhupada said, do it. Then here, this is the practical reality of being a sincere servant of Prabhupada, of Krishna in this world. We have to fight with the whole world. Of course, we don't have to fight with the whole world, but this whole world's influence, first of all, is on us. And we have to decide who we're going to serve. Are we going to serve the world and make the world happy? Are we going to serve Krishna? Are we going to live by the standards of materialistic so-called civilization? or we're going to live by the standards of transcendental knowledge, which means Savadamam Prityajam Mamekam, making Krishna happy, surrendering to Him. And not surrendering to Him and Maya, the world, at the same time. You cannot do both. You cannot serve both. Sometimes we're not strong enough, perhaps, to fully serve Krishna at every moment, but that intent is glorious. And with sincere attempt and trying our best, it is glorious. And then we're working our material natures and desires in such a way that they will bring us towards that point and not opposite from that point. Because we want to accept that it is Krishna and Krishna alone is our shelter. So this is amazing. We have to fight with the whole world, and that was Prabhupada's mood. Because he saw that the world, with its godless civilization, despite the externals of religiousness, everyone was interested in sense gratification. And the purpose of religion even was sense gratification. Me, me, me in the center. Well, actually, the purpose of spiritual life, religious life, is to learn how to surrender to and please Krishna, and ultimately to love Krishna completely, fully. The giving of the soul, the self, to Krishna. I am yours. And if a soul, if a person says that even once, I am yours from this day forward with sincerity, if he once chants the Hare Krishna Mahamantra with sincerity, once, then Krishna's reciprocation, as he promises, his vow, I shall henceforward always take shelter of this soul. That is his vow. So the end of the Bhagavad Gita was practical fighting, and the end of and victory for the Pandavas. And the end of this morning walk is practical service. And that service is the field in which we learn how to surrender more deeply and more fully. Without service, it doesn't work. The process will not work without service. We have to serve. We have to take some service. And this is, as we mentioned yesterday, this is one of the glories of Prabhupada's preaching movement, that his desire was so big to spread Krishna consciousness, make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious. Is there somewhere you can find a service where you could do something to either help someone, your next door neighbor or your child or people you don't know, or help those who are helping, who are serving in different ways, and assist them and serve them? You can find some service somewhere, or at least find an aunt to give a little prasadam to. Or there's something, we can do something. But do it, we should do the service again, not like work, but seva. Infused with devotion, with that mood. And then, someone over here, Prabhupada says, look what we're doing. We're fighting, practically speaking, with the whole world, the whole mood. The whole mood is economic development, sense enjoyment. That's everything, especially sex life. This is the goal of everyone's activity. And we're born into this culture. It's so difficult. So we have to fight the whole world outside, and we have to fight the whole world inside. Just trying to get our security in the material world. We're born into this. We have to fight outside and inside. Very difficult. Very difficult. But at the time of death, everything else will appear like zeros, whatever strengths and relationships we've accumulated on the material level, they will be insufficient. Like zeros. So many zeros. And what will be of value is the strength of our surrender to Krishna and our faith that yes, He will protect me in this most difficult time. So the tests in life, although it's easy to say this right now while we're all sitting here and you know everything, the weather's not too hot or too cold and we're all ate breakfast already, and it's easy to say the tests in life are really preparations for the ultimate test of life, to see if in all circumstances, the good and the bad circumstances, we take shelter of Krishna and actually keep ourselves humbly as His servant, regardless of what happens to us in our life. The good and the bad, just always remain steadily as a servant of Krishna. If we can do that, and if we can use our life to become trained to do that, and to serve Him with great faith and love throughout everything, then jivatiyo mukti padesa dayabhat. We are already practically speaking in the kingdom of God. We're already in the spiritual world. But yet, there is a war that has to go on. One with all the, with the mind and all its petty, silly, trivial attachments, and our service to help others in this world. And in helping others, we really will help ourselves too. And of course, everyone who gives classes, we know this more than anyone in one sense, because you have to listen very carefully when you're giving a class, and the first person who you're preaching to is yourself. I highly recommend preaching and giving classes. And usually you end up preaching about just what you need to hear yourself. And you can't fall asleep. Everyone else can keep their minds going out the window and make believe that they're sitting there listening attentively. But if I do that, if my mind goes out the window, then I'm caught by everyone. So preach, talk to others about Krishna. It is so healthy. You'll get Krishna's mercy. And not only that, here, this one gentleman says, Prabhupada says, we have to fight with the whole world, and he's trying to encourage Prabhupada. The number of forces will increase day by day. You're making so many disciples to help you fight with the world, fight the materialistic tendencies of the world. And of course, here we are, monkey soldiers at best. The number of forces are increasing day by day. They will fight adequately. Prabhupada said, yes. But you have done it single-handed, Prabhupada. Single-handed, double-handed, doesn't matter. If Krishna is there in the background, nothing else matters. Arjuna fought single-handed. And that's surrender. When you know that Krishna is there in the background, and the prayer of a devotee, his desire is, let me be instrumental in your service. Nimitya Karan Baba Savya Sachin. That's what Krishna asked Arjuna. You be my instrument in this battle. They are all dead. The opposing warriors are dead, and I want you to be my instrument in this. Instrument to kill my relatives? What a thing to ask Arjuna. What a thing to ask him. And not only ask, demand. But yet give Arjuna the freedom to accept or not accept Krishna's desire. And of course Arjuna is a warrior, not that we should all... Yes, Krishna wants us to call everyone rascal and kill our relatives. That's what I learned. No. No crazy cultishness allowed. But what does Krishna want us to do? Arjuna was a warrior. His whole life was training as a warrior. What does Krishna want me to do? How can I please Krishna? How can I serve Krishna? This is the meditation of a devotee. And then if Krishna takes up our cause, if we become humble and dependent, if our service is Krishna is actually coming properly through the disciplic succession, and it is fulfilling Krishna's desires, pleasing to Krishna, and if we become humble enough and Krishna takes up our cause, then whether we do it single-handedly, as did Srila Prabhupada, or double-handedly, or quadruple-handedly, or unlimitedly, we will be successful. Because who's really doing it? It is Krishna who is in the background. He is the one doing it. He is the karta. He is the doer. He is sarva-karana karanam. And Prabhupada had said this before too. Don't they see that Krishna, about Govardhan Hill? Don't they see Krishna acting now? He's the one doing it, the spreading. Prabhupada's doing it. Prabhupada got the glories. But Krishna was giving him the power. He was empowered. Krishna Shakti Naivina Tarpavas. And you cannot do this without Krishna doing it. What Prabhupada did. So this is the end. And it is a wonderful ending. Only surrender to Krishna, and he'll take care of you. But it should end in something practical. What does it mean? Practical service. The devotee means one who wants to do devotional service. Please accept me as your servant. Allow me to serve you. And then, if one's consciousness is right, and if it's Krishna's desire, then one could do something wonderful. So the result of the Bhagavad Gita was that Arjuna fought. And who was victorious? The Pandavas. And the result of Srila Prabhupada's association, which included his morning walks in Vrindavan, was that his disciples were inspired to surrender to him and serve him for his pleasure. And one practical result, as we were just saying, of their sincere service was Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Mandir, and that's what they were talking about completing. So these are some old pictures of Krishna Balaram Mandir.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
How can we forward to that shloka which we read about yesterday, about Yogeshwara and Krishna?
Yes.
In that Prabhupada had written that actually the living entities are the marginal energy.
Yes. The tattva shakti.
They have a choice either to go towards the spiritual energy or fall down to the material energy.
Yes.
And then in the line below he wrote that actually they belong to the spiritual energy, so
yes,
to the superior energy. So I was not able to understand that.
Okay. Maybe you can just shut the computer down.
Yeah.
And turn off the... So we're part and parcel of Krishna's. We are made of the internal energy, but because we're tiny, what's that verse? Chetar gyalkya tetapara. Krishna shakti para prokta. Chetar gyalkya tetapara. Avidya karma sanganya. Tritya shakti uchite. There are three energies. One is the spiritual energy, one is the marginal energy, and one is the material energy. So we are of the spiritual energy. We are part of Krishna. But because we're marginal, because we're tiny, we're called marginal. So something that's tiny, so tiny, insignificantly tiny, needs a shelter. So our choice, even though we're spiritual, is whether we get shelter, take the shelter of the internal energy, the spiritual energy, Ladini Samvit, Krishna's antaranga shakti, or the external energy. We need a shelter, so we either take shelter of yoga maya, the internal energy, or Mahamaya, the external energy. If we take care of, if we take shelter of the internal energy, if we gain that shelter, then we live in the spiritual realm. If we gain the shelter of the material energy, we live in the material realm. So our, what we're doing now is trying to shift our shelter from the material energy to the spiritual energy. In the material energy, we want to enjoy. That's the hallmark of the material energy, the external energy. We are thinking of ourselves as the center, and we want to enjoy. And the spiritual energy is we want to serve. So, ironically, if we have the shelter of the external energy, we want to enjoy, and we end up serving. And with the spiritual energy, if we take that shelter, if we gain that shelter, we want to serve and we end up enjoying. Because that's our natural position. So that's what Prabhupada meant. Is that clear? Yes?
It's only because of our mind.
Yes.
That we are, we come under the influence of material energy.
Yes, because the Vishnu Tattva is the same, qualitatively the same, but quantitatively big. But we are quantitatively small, like sparks, like a spark. Like a spark, if it comes from the fire and it lands in the water, it's extinguished. If it lands on some dry grass, it burns. So that's considered the mode of goodness. So if we can gain the shelter of the mode of goodness, then our natural consciousness, the fiery part of us, will burst into flames.
What about the Nitya Siddhas devotees?
The what?
The Nitya Siddha devotees? Because they are also minute part and parcel.
But they've gained the shelter of the internal energy. Is that clear? So that's because we need one shelter or another. We can't exist independently because we're too tiny. So that's what we're trying to do, to gain the shelter of the internal energy.
You said that I read somewhere that the marginal energy or the Tattvastu Shakti is a particular energy and has a particular characteristic, and the characteristic of it, of that energy, is this independence. The Prabhupada says Krishna won't take that back, and that independence gives it the flexibility to choose one or the other shelters. And when the living entity chooses the
to choose the Surup Shakti, they remain detached, they're rightly situated within the spiritual energy. I don't think they're called detached anymore, actually, once they're in the... that would be the answer to the question of the Nitya Siddha. They're called Nitya Siddha, but we need shelter. And that's why everyone is longing for shelter. We don't want to take shelter in something that cannot actually give us shelter. Did you want to add anything else? Yes.
I just read this question about Ram Sharmat, and so how can we become able to sincerely pray to become surrendered?
In other words, the question is, how can we become sincere?
Yes, we can pray for surrender.
But okay, but the question is really, how do you become sincere? Because if you're sincere, you'll pray for surrender. Okay. Now, we actually heard Prabhupada answer this question in Melbourne. One person raised his hand and said, how do you become sincere? And you know what Prabhupada said? By associating with the sincere. If you associate with those who are more sincere, that rubs off on us, and that desire, rather than the other kinds of desires. A prophet actually said, how do you, if you want to become a drunkard, how do you become a drunkard? You just associate with those who love to frequent the bars, the pubs. Then you'll develop that taste. And then Prabhupada looked at the devotees and associate with them. So that also puts great weight of responsibility on the on devotees is to be sincere. So we're good association, not bad association.
But it's not the name that association has. Is it that we become inspired to increase our devotion service, or is it more the mercy we receive from more advanced devotees attending that
class? What do you mean by mercy?
Maybe that they might that we get in favor from them, like that they say that they like us to God and they recommend us to Krishna.
That's there too, but that's not as. But the simplest way to understand it is instructions and just being with that person. Just simply being with them. Otherwise, it's because it's lava matra sarasange savasiddhi hoy. Just a moment. Because that taste that they have by their association, we taste something of what they're tasting, and we want it. And as soon as we want that taste, we are very fortunate, because Krishna will reciprocate. Did you ever associate with anyone who like really liked, I don't know what, but something silly, you know, either cars or computers, you know, they were really into that. You know, when you associate with them, you get that taste, it rubs off. If you associate with a person who has a cold, what do you end up with? Yeah. And as there's an old American saying, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. Which is the same principle. So we have to be very careful with our association. So we should associate with those who's sincere. Sincerity really is everything. It's sort of really simple in one sense. I actually want to serve Krishna, and that's, I don't want to be in the material world trying to be the enjoyer and exploiting everything and everyone for me. No, I actually just want to be simply a servant of the servants of Krishna. If we just sincerity. Prabhupada was even once asked, what's the, they were asking him in the very early days about philosophers. Is this philosopher Krishna conscious? Is that philosopher Krishna conscious? Is this philosopher? And Prabhupada's reply was, their sincerity is their Krishna consciousness. So if someone's sincerely trying for sincere about a desire to come forward, and probably everyone at some point who's sitting in this room expressed a sincere desire to find out who they were, or to know the truth, or to love God. You know, different forms of our desires, and Krishna heard that desire, and therefore gave us the opportunity to step forward, and then we have our freedom. What do I want? And then what happens often, unfortunately or fortunately, it's just the way it goes, is we walk forward to some degree and then we look back and we think of all the things we could have done and all the things we missed, and then we have to go back. If we want that, we have to make a choice. Well, do I want to go forward? Because you can't go forward and you can't go left and right at the same time. If you go left, and you gain the benefits of going left, but you lose the benefits of going right. And if you go right, you gain the benefits of going right, but you lose the benefits of going left. The hard choices of life. So sometimes we choose to go right, but then we look at all the things on the left and we said, maybe I shouldn't have really done that. Maybe I went too fast. Maybe this, maybe that. And then we start thinking about it, and then you see, and you start meditating on it like that. And then you sometimes have to go back to pick up and do that and learn the lessons of what the left road has to offer. But as Prabhupada said, that Krishna doesn't, once he gives you something, it's yours. So you never lose that advancement. So that, but you just have to go back and, you know, play around a little while. But then, As soon as you say, that's not what I want, go forward and you're back practically where you were. But some people, even though there's desires, say, pulling on them, they look back and they see, oh, I could have done that, I could have done that. They say, yes, I know I could have done that, but I don't want that. You know, through understanding, through the depth of their taste, through their deep sincerity and their austerity or whatever, strength of mind, they say, no, I don't want that. You know, I could have that, I could enjoy it, but I know what it means. In any case, I don't want that. But that's hard, and you have to be in very good association to live a life like that. And usually we have a little, you know, we go, there's a little bit of dancing going on like that. But Krishna's there, and if we've once sincerely said that, chanted Krishna's names, he'll never let us go. And that's the thing. We may want to go that way, but he says, sorry. Sorry, I want you to go this way. But. Try and see. Yes.
We have such a tendency to judge other people and feel judged ourselves. So how can we stop that way of thinking?
Well, which one?
Both.
Well, the way to stop judging or criticizing others, this is a natural function of the false ego, the mind being affected by false ego, always trying to judge others, to put them down as if that's going to make us better than what we are and things like that, and seeing our position in relationship to others and always trying to see it in a way that we're a little bit better. That's one way. So we have to pray, if we actually don't want to judge others, we have to pray to Krishna to help us. And we should, on one level, save our judgments for ourselves. Save the rascal calling for ourselves. But that brings to the second question that you're asking. What happens if we are always judging ourselves and, as they say nowadays, beating ourselves up? And it's not actually productive. It's actually a neurotic tendency, as opposed to being a spiritual humility. So what do we do if we have the tendency to always be judging and criticizing ourselves? The mind just going round and round and round and round about how bad we are, how bad we are, how bad we are. That's not spiritual, that's not humility. It's just neurosis. So what we should do about that is just quickly get the benefit of, yes, I'm so fallen, I have so many faults, Krishna, please help me. And quickly go to the holy names and take shelter of Krishna through his holy names or through prayer. I don't have that little sheet with me, but there's a nice little, there's a morning walk in 1968 where Prabhupada says, we're all so disturbed, we should pray. And we should pray to Krishna, have this and this and this, I can't do this, so many limitations. Oh Krishna, please help me. Without your mercy, I'm doomed to be what I am in this fallen condition. So we turn that negative into a positive through surrender. Surrender to the holy name. Surrender to Krishna. Follow what I mean? But don't stay always just thinking about how bad you are, because who are you thinking about all the time? It's me. I mean, there's yourself. You know, I'm so bad, I've done this wrong. That's not spiritual. And that's what they call low self-esteem. But that's completely different from humility. Humility means you acknowledge your fallen condition and then you take shelter of Krishna. But take shelter of him. And there has to be some degree of controlling the rascal mind. And the way to do that is, no easy way to do that, but we chant Krishna's names, we pray. It goes back to sincerity again, and we don't do it so well, and we suffer from it sometimes, and then we have to just get up and try again. That's what it really takes. It takes getting up and trying again. That's also sincerity. Did you want to add something?
It seems like the second mantra after the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the others is get up and try again.
Try again.
It's important.
Yeah. If you have a billion fall downs, you have to have a billion and one get ups and try again. I mean, fall downs on any level, but I meant really on, you know, if you, it's so embarrassing actually, you give classes and you tell everyone they should be doing this, then you see you don't do it. And then you have to, you get embarrassed by it, and then you say, well, I have to try again. And you try. And you take a step forward. You know, we progress. You know, we're hoping for, as Mataji said, we want that kind of mercy where that, you know, that associate, that mercy that it's like, boom. You know, like, so we don't have to do all this hard work of spiritual life, of finding out how insincere we are and coping with that and praying to Krishna for help. It's not, to find out that we're actually fallen souls, is hard work. It's painful work. It's not simple. Soul searching, it's hard work. But life, in spiritual life, if you keep to it, you'll find it out gradually. If you just go through life as a devotee, as a trying, aspiring devotee, aspiring servant, Krishna will teach us. He will teach us that we're just little tiny insignificant souls who need a disproportionate amount of mercy. Considering our size, we're only dependent on mercy. That's the whole thing. But we have to make our endeavor, otherwise we don't get mercy. So we have to do what is in, what's our job, our part in it. And we leave Krishna's part to Krishna. But really, we are little, we are tiny, we are weak, and we are dependent on Krishna. We have to keep trying. Okay? Any other? Yes?
Probably this point you were talking about, I was talking with a new devotee and I was sort of like having a little bit of that attitude and I said something, there was some misunderstanding and I said, oh look, that was my fault because I'm not very intelligent. And she straight away, being a new devotee, she didn't like that I was putting myself down. She said, you're always putting yourself down. I thought Krishna's devotees should be, you know, trying to prove how intelligent they are, so it looks really good to the world that Krishna has devotees that are very smart and very good. And I didn't know what to say to that, because also my Guru Maharaj sort of says when we're taught to be devotees, we should praise them and say, you know, you're really good. I can see in the future, you know, you're going to be a really good whatever, to try and encourage people. But we should at the same time be thinking, but actually you're a rascal and you're not very intelligent and, you know, you don't know anything, and Krishna's the, you know, we completely depend on Krishna. So how we can...
It depends on the depth of your realization. We shouldn't. Yeah, the one of the main keys in preaching and dealing with people is to be to speak from your realization, the point of your realization. If we're always putting ourselves down. For example, often it's not humility, because it's lacking the second part. The second part of knowing that you're a fallen soul is to be taking shelter of Krishna, and that's the more important of the two. If you have no other good quality, this is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you have only one good quality that you take, you surrender to Krishna, then you're a devotee. So we should emphasize that. And also, if we know that if we're always talking about how bad we are and how fallen we are and we've like this, that we're only talking about ourselves, and usually people like to hear about themselves, they don't like to hear about you. One time I went when I was preaching in Malaysia, actually I went into a university's professor's office many, many years ago, and I saw a little sign on his desk that changed my life. And it said, I used to worry about what everyone was thinking about me until I realized that no one was thinking about me. They were only thinking about themselves. So no one actually wants to hear about how fallen you are and how terrible you are. So better talk about Krishna. Because no one cares. Everyone's only thinking about themselves. So just think about Krishna and try to serve them. If you're serving in one way and it doesn't seem to be working, okay, then shift it. See, it's really a hard thing to accept in this world and in ISKCON. Because when you join, you know, when you first join, it's like, you know, the first days of marriage, you know, or something, you know. First week of marriage. You know, when you're first starting, you know, you have stars in your eyes. We used to call it the honeymoon period. We used to call it Krishna book and hot milk. When, you know, you'd see that when the young couple were betrothed, you know, just before they were married, and they would sit together in the evening, the devotees, and they would be sitting and drinking hot milk together and reading Krishna book to each other, and you could see the stars twinkling in their eyes. But that phase... What are you laughing about, Mataji?
What's that little look you gave?
Who was I looking at? I wasn't looking at you. I promise I really wasn't. We never had that face. Yes, dear. So, when we can have that kind of a view when, you know, ISKCON, and it lasts about as long. you expect that everyone's going to love each other because everyone's spiritual on the path and no problems and this and that and everyone's this and everyone's that. And then when you walk into something with idealism, then the flip side of that, of a material quality, will show its head, and that's cynicism. Then you turn from everyone's wonderful to everyone's terrible. But it's actually neither everyone is wonderful or everyone is terrible. It's that there's a bunch of souls trying to become servants of Krishna. So, one of the things that we find out is that people tend to be absorbed in themselves. You know, and it's rare that you find a soul who really cares. And this, well, we should, and this is one of the most important things that really should be stressed in the society of devotees, is that we should serve the devotees. This is actually how to make advancement, is become servants of the Vaishnavas, of the devotees. Which devotees? Oh, the real big ones only. Yeah. No. Become a servant of the devotees. Which devotees? All devotees. Actually, all living entities, because the fact is that we're servants, and we should deal with people in a way that our consciousness is not exploiting them, rather it's serving them. I mean, this is ideal. It's hard to do because our tendencies are just the opposite, but we should be in the mood of servants. So, don't always criticize yourself. Always take shelter of Krishna. That's the essence of it. But, and don't worry. If you don't criticize yourself, you'll be lacking criticism. Don't worry. Because everyone else will criticize you. Don't worry. Did you hear about that? So I'm not sure I answered your question.
Well, I guess I was just sort of wondering, like, because my Guru Maharaj was saying that we should, like, say someone say that they've started playing Radanga or harmonium, we should say, wow, that's really cool.
Okay, this is just a way of dealing, okay? This is a way of dealing. Guru Maharaj is making a practical suggestion on how to deal with people to encourage them in Krishna consciousness. So it's a practical point. Simple practical
point. Yeah, you encourage them, and then when they join Krishna consciousness,
then we criticize them. Yeah.
No, we've got them around as long as you thought.
But I find that if you just simple and simple with people, because people are looking for genuine people, because it's really hard to find that in this world, unpretentiousness. Speak from the heart, but don't. Prabhu, I just want to be really open-hearted and honest with you and tell you how much I hate you. Revealing our minds in confidence. No, we have... No, we should serve. There's a saying, an old Confucian saying, the Duke of Wen and Confucius were walking together. And the Duke of Wen said to Confucius that such and such person is so careful that he thinks three times before he speaks. Confucius looked at him and said, "Twice is sufficient." And Prabhupada also said that a gentleman thinks twice before speaking. Even once would be a sufficient problem. Yes, what other question do you have? Did we answer your question?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I did have another question on a different... You mentioned that we talked about the Ramayana, that Krishna, if someone says once with sincerity, then my devotee, you're not always... protecting. So if you chanted once, and you were making the joke that you might be saying, "I want to go this way," and Krishna says no, and well, if that's the case, then we look at some of the gurus or great devotees that have fallen or left Krishna consciousness. Does that mean they never chanted once with sincerity, or is it that then later they beg Krishna, no, "I changed my mind," and then Krishna has to give it to them? Or why is it that they fall down if the case is that they chanted with sincerity?
Because it's Krishna. What we judge as a falling down isn't what happens to those who have chanted once with sincerity, because they may have to take a temporary detour to come back under Krishna's guidance. The example that's given is that when a cat picks up a mouse, it's very different from when he picks up with the same mouth his own kitten, her own kitten. So when a devotee leaves, he's not at all in the same situation as one who has never been a devotee. So Krishna is dealing with them in his own way. So we should always be respectful. And mostly keep our mind on our own service. That's what I've seen. And we should be kind to devotees. And also some devotees, especially the older devotees, they didn't have the opportunity to go slowly. Even there was like in a war. When there's a war, an emergency, and even sometimes young people have to pick up arms to survive, so the country will survive. So Prabhupada picked up so many people who were just so young and new, and we were asked to do something so far beyond our capacity, actually.
Yeah.
And then some people couldn't keep it up. Some souls couldn't keep it up because they were acting so far beyond their capacity. So, due to sincerity, they were trying to please Prabhupada. And then the rest of the luggage they were carrying along reminded them, "How about us? You have these desires and these desires and these desires." And so they turned back, and they wanted to. But Krishna doesn't treat them in the same way as he treats other people who have never done any service to them. And we've seen this so many times already, that so many people who were in the early days of the movement, they were very prominent devotees, and then for one reason or another, they left the association of devotees. Krishna never leaves them. And they remember Krishna, they remember Prabhupada, and then we've seen it then in the last part of their lives often, that they're right there. There's one person I'm thinking of, perhaps the most dramatic story. Was this one person who he was a sannyasi actually, and he left the renounced order and engaged in very, very improper activities, and then he caught a dread disease and he was dying, and suddenly he started saying, Prabhupada, you've come for me. And then so many cases of things like that. I know one devotee also who was acting also fairly similar circumstance and was acting improperly, and he had a dream, and Prabhupada said to him, I don't want you to die in this state. And then he ended up coming to Vrindavan. So Krishna is not like us. You know, when someone's nice to us, we like them. And when someone turns their back on us, we turn our back on them. But Krishna's not that kind of a master. And that's why that was the point of that. That even the monkeys who were saying, kill this Bibhisan, when they heard Lord Rama's vow, and they understood the quality of the person they were serving, even though it contradicted what they were saying to do to him, they were ecstatic. So it's better, again, to keep our judgments, oh, this one's like this, and this one's like this, and this one's fallen. We keep our judgments to ourselves. And one of my favorite sayings nowadays is, mind your own business. That's, you know, that software, MYOB, they call it. You know that software? That's what it stands for, mind your own business. In other words, keep your mind on what your service is. If Krishna gives you the service of judging all the people who have fallen, then you should take that up with great sincerity. But unless he has given you that service, you leave that to those who he's given it to. Yes.
When he got to the hospital, he actually died. And after they were able to revive him, he came back. And
he died
for a short time. And he came back to consciousness. And he said that when he was sort of dead, these terrible beasts came, but they couldn't take him because the visionary duties came and said, no, no, you can't have him. And then they turned to him and they said to him, it is not your time to go now. You have to get serious. And then they left. And then he came back. And he was the son. I mean, he wasn't very serious at all. He was sort of out there in the material world doing his thing, you know, young boy. But still, he was protected. And then he got that wake up for.
And Krishna doesn't let us go. So, if there, that shows how Krishna loves his devotees so much, and this is the prime quality of Krishna. He's not a dictator. He's a lover, a playful lover at that. And this is his Atma Pajanta Vadanya, the Bhakta Vatsala. This is Krishna's prime, most wonderful, magnanimous quality. So, he loves actually all living entities. But, ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya, maya tatesu chapyam. Especially, he's partial to his devotees. So if some devotees really have it as their mood to help other devotees so that they advance, how Krishna will shower his mercy upon them. And that's why serving the devotees is so nice, because it evokes Krishna's mercy. him because he so much appreciates. Just like every parent knows this, if their children are having trouble with something and someone helps them, oh, so how much affection and appreciation they have for those kind. So that's the essence of the preaching movement. But what we shouldn't do in the preaching movement is try to bring everyone from outside into the preaching movement and not take care of the devotees who are already inside. Forget them, Forget them. Well, we just want to make new devotees, but then the new devotees, once they're in, then they're rascals. You say, no, we should really take care of each other in a nice way. Try as much as we can to be gentle with each other and take care of each other. And then our preaching will become really attractive if we actually have communities where the devotees actually care for each other, because there will be nothing in this world that can rival that, because it's the hardest thing to do, especially in Kali Yuga, to have cooperation and to care for each other. Most difficult thing to do. Something so worthwhile to strive for. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
If somebody in the field cares for us or protects us and tries to help us, then usually we become very indebted and develop a strong affection for this person, like for some children to their parents. So we can practically see in our life how Krishna has provided so many things for us, helping us so many times and protecting us.
Do you practically see that in your life?
No.
I'm asking you an honest, simple question, because you said it. Do you actually see that in your life, that Krishna's taking care of you? It's not a tricky question.
No,
I'm just asking.
I can see that.
How wonderful.
But I wish I would understand it much better. This is my question.
But at least appreciate what you have before wanting more. How wonderful. But you're seeing that Krishna's personally interfering in your life and helping you. How wonderful. How wonderful. Lucky. Any other questions or comments? What was your question again? Or was it a comment? Oh, sorry.
My question was, I often feel very ungrateful.
But that's due to immaturity, isn't it? So as we mature, naturally, because especially you start appreciating the value of the gift that you have. So the more we advance, the more mature we get, the more we appreciate what we've been given. And therefore, and the more we live in what we've been given, our appreciation for those who have given it, helped us along the way, grows only. We're just like the young child is unappreciative and hard-hearted, but the old, mature ones, sometimes it takes us till we're 50 to get mature. But never mind. The teacher's definition of whether a student is doing well or not is whether the student is moving forward and improving and learning. So we shouldn't get frustrated that we're not immediately up here, but we should go step by step, because very often if we try to immediately get up here, we forget all the intermediary steps, and you try to get up there, and you're artificially up there, and you're not really up there anyway, and then you have to, you have to look behind, and, oh, I could have done this. Just Take it easy. Force it. Sometimes it's important to look ahead and see how far we still have to go. And then we become very humble. But we can also get very discouraged too sometimes. So sometimes we also have to look behind and see how far we've come. And then we get encouraged. And when we get, yes, I'm really doing well, then we have to look ahead. And Krishna is so kind, he'll hold up a mirror and I'll say, oh, is that what I look like? Oh, sorry about that. And then, oh, I have so far to go. And then, so this is the process of Krishna consciousness. So the most important thing is what? Okay. But who's good at mind reading? What's the most important thing? Yes. Yeah, true, but that's not what I'm thinking right now. What's the most important thing? Yes, that's true, dear, but that's not what I'm thinking now. Huh? Yes. Oh. Anyway, what I'm thinking is to continue somehow or another, just to keep going. Don't get off the plane, don't get off the boat, just keep going. And although it seems so obvious and so simple, it's not always so easy. But that's the most important thing, to keep trying to keep going. Because, and the reason why we keep going is that famous story that that even Prabhupada told about Mahatma Gandhi, that one day he had a fight with his wife and he kicked her out of the house. Did you ever hear the story? And then after some time there's a timid on the door. What do you want? I told you to go away. Why didn't you go away? Because I had nowhere to go. So we have nowhere to go. We have only Krishna. We can't go away. Because where is there to go? So what do you think Mahatma Gandhi did? Do you think he slammed the door again? All right, come. Just continue. Which is probably, oh, she's already gone, but I'll tell you then. It's probably the very important instruction in household of life too. If you're married, continue. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
When we are preaching, when we are doing some preaching programs or something like that, and we are trying to cultivate some people who are coming for a preaching program, then how do we...
Just, first of all, change the word cultivate to serve. This is our terminology, but if you think in terms of trying to serve these souls, because cultivating, what do we mean by cultivate?
Influence.
Yeah, trying to get them to join or something. But that's part of it, but we're trying to serve them. Yeah.
How do we draw a balance between, because sometimes, you know, they have to be told about chanting or need to increase the amounts or maybe start offering, you know, some of these.
How do you deal with Aditya?
Sometimes, you know, we have to be judgmental, but we have to have a balance, so it becomes...
How do you deal with him?
There I know from where I have...
Why do you know?
Because I'm his mother.
And what is the special relationship between a mother and son? Oh, go like this, Aditya. Now say it.
It's my duty to...
No. Come on, say it. No. He's not listening.
Love?
Yes, it's love. So if you have affection... Okay, Aditya, You can listen now. So, when you're correcting someone, or have to push them, first you best that you have some affection for them. Because when there's affection, people will take it properly. And if you can't find any affection for the person, better find someone who has affection for them, so they can tell them. And you tell those who you have affection for. That's the key. Because if you tell people things like all the time like that, and you don't have affection for them, because if you have affection for them and they know that, they know you're doing it for their welfare. So then they take it properly. They may not like it, they may like it, but they'll take it properly. They'll listen, because they know it's for their welfare, because you have affection for them, you care about them. Yes.
Or should it come naturally?
The cultivation makes it come naturally. Because the cultivation is chanting Hare Krishna and becoming a devotee, and the heart becomes softer, and going through life and seeing how people helped you, and some people only chastised you and it didn't help you, and you go through life. How can one become mature immediately? You can't. You have to go through life. So we try our best, We just try our best. Try to help others. And I figure it's about every 10 years of life. You look back at what you were like 10 years ago and you think, oh, I was like that, I did that, oh. So now, 10 years from now, we'll be looking back at now and we'll think, oh, I was like that, I was like that. So, gradually. It's hard. Because it's hard, I know, to get the balance. Because on one hand, we're taught to be very enthusiastic and this and that, and to be very eager and greedy. But on the other point, we're taught patience. So it's hard to put patience and eagerness together in the same package. But yet we're supposed to.
It's a marathon.
Yeah. We run it like a marathon race, not like a sprint. So again, the most important thing is to finish, to keep going, keep trying. What do you think? Yeah. Huh? Well, anything.
It's more like when I came to Krishna consciousness, the thing that I was attracted about was friendship. Like I saw devotees were very friendly.
Yes.
And even the way they gave me prasadam or the way they preached to me, it was real love in there. Like they were not demanding anything from me, but they were giving me. I felt like they were doing service to me. So that is what attracted me
to
Ramana Krishna consciousness.
Everyone is starving for love in this world, isn't it, in affection? And in the material world, people with the promise of love tend to want to exploit us. They're thinking of what's in it for them. So in a spiritual society, ideally, this is the standard. We should serve out of affection for the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. But if we see that everyone isn't on that standard, we shouldn't become cynical. Rather, we should try to become on that standard ourselves. Because we can't expect so hard to change the self, what to speak of to change the world. So that's where the changing of the world begins. Thank you for sharing that. Any other? What do you think?
Bring that back, Prabhu, that we relish the relationship with the devotees. That's why we just keep on going, continue with the association with the devotees.
And I think the Melbourne Temple is very fortunate, actually. Nice community of devotees.
Well organized.
Huh?
Organized.
But more than that. They're cared for. Mere organization alone doesn't do it. But without organization, of course, it doesn't go anywhere. But it's, I think it's the care, the bhakti that's here. Mercy of Prabhupada, mercy of Radha-Balava, mercy of Kornatai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. And all, so many devotees have really given so much of their life. You know. You are one of them. Any other? Prabhu? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think?
One of them.
Huh?
One of them. It's a mix of everything. It's a mix of everything. I feel like you don't find any hypocrisy, no laws, any understanding, you know. You approach them, they explain to you everything.
Wow. How wonderful.
It's an exchange thing.
Anyone else have any questions or comments? Do you have any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Sure? Anything else to say? Cool.
How can we be fully dependent and still be capable, have skills, and we're taught to fend for yourself and all that? How can you actually be fully dependent on Krishna when you feel like you have so many skills? Like if the world comes to an end, every man for himself, and I'll be right, sort of thing.
No, you won't. If the world comes to an end, you'll be dead. So, but think of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna trained for so long. He was a powerful warrior. And yet he depended on Krishna. He worked very hard. He used all his skills. But his dependence wasn't on his own abilities. It was on Krishna. And he was working on Krishna's order. There's a subtle difference. You have skills. Use them. Where did the skills come from?
Krishna.
Well, he can take them away in a moment too.
Yeah.
So who should you depend on? The temporary residence of those skills, or the person who is an ocean of the skill? So he's given them to you, but really he can take them away.
Mm.
And that's what old age is like, which you don't know anything about yet. But you used to know about it, but you forgot. But see, when I look in the mirror and I think, oh, this is me, and I'm very young, I'm this kind of a person, I have this ability, I don't do this very well, I do this, I do that. And then as you get older, you start losing all those false parts, those parts of you that weren't actually you, but you thought were you. You know what I mean? You know, like athletic ability or something like that. You like to run around and play some cricket every now and then. And footy, but when you get old, you can't do it anymore. And if you think that's you, you feel you've lost yourself, but it isn't you. So those abilities were given by Krishna and they were taken away by Krishna's energy. So what we want to do is to learn to depend on the person who has all ability, even though we may have some abilities, and to use those abilities in his service is just what it was meant to do. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam. But we shouldn't think that they're ours, because if we think that they're ours, when we use them, we're going to become proud. And if we become proud, Krishna will so kindly teach us humility. But it won't be fun. If we think we're so smart and so this and so that, he'll teach us. Oh yes, he'll teach us that we're not actually very smart. We're not strong. We're just tiny, insignificant souls, and that what he's given us is his, and let us use it in his service. So, does that answer that?
Yeah.
But we should, whatever we've been given, we should really use it to please Krishna. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Can we say that all our shortcomings in our dealings, like individually with each other and collectively as a community, and our preaching effectiveness in the world, can be solved by, you know, the increase of loving relationships with the devotees? The more we can have loving, wonderful loving relationships with the devotees, then all those shortcomings can be solved. That's the main thing.
Somehow or another, over the last years, I think less about what the work. If only everyone else should, all the problems would be solved if they do this. Somehow I don't think like that so much anymore. I think more like what my service is. So if I think, because then what will happen? If I start thinking like that, then I'll start saying that these people, they're not having proper loving relationships, and look at these, and all their problems be solved, they just serve the devotees, and all their problems, and I'm just criticizing everyone. So instead of doing that, I just try to look at what my service is, and if I think the most important thing is to serve the devotees, instead of pointing that towards everyone else, everyone should be serving the devotees, what I'm trying to learn how to do is to just, if I think it's so important, I should do it. Not prescribed to the world. And other than, the simple basic things that we hear in Shastra. But it's so important that I should do it. And then when I look at it, that which usually I prescribe for the whole world to solve their problems is usually one of my main shortcomings, that I'm not doing it. I'm trying to learn how to mind my own business. And my business is not to save the world at this point. If Krishna tells me it is, so far, even though I've tried previously, it doesn't work. Prabhupada once said, don't try to be a great devotee, just be a good devotee. So my business is not to save the world. So therefore, that's how I answer that question. So everyone should know what their service is. And that, I think, is important. How they should please Krishna. Yeah.
Well, my Guru Maharaj said that my service was to make, one of my services was to make devotees. Actually, he said I have to make 30 devotees this year, right? So I'm wondering,
You know which is the first one you should make into a devotee? Yes, exactly. If you concentrate on that one, then the rest will come easy. But don't criticize yourself in front of others.
This is sort of tied into what you were just saying to my guru about, we should just mind our own business. So, okay, I mind my own business. But I had two circumstances. One new devotee that we sort of been trying to make a devotee, which we rang up and we said, we're going to go Vindas tonight, so you want to join us for that instead of just coming home, you can join us for that. She said, actually, I'm going to the movies with some of the people from our youth group at the temple. And we thought, they're taking it to the movies? Oh my gosh. And then another thing, I had a new devotee come along. I met on Sankirtan and he came to the Rath Yatra and he straight away said, you know what, I want to work for ISKCON. I almost fell over. I couldn't believe someone was saying this. So I engaged him almost straight away in helping me at the book table and in distributing books. And then,
why shouldn't people go to the movies?
Well, because they're going to get more sanskara and it's more contaminated and more...
Because it's associated... Because so many things... No, that's not what I was going to say, that it's great if you go to the movies with devotees. That's not what I was going to say. I was going to say that the problem with it is that I already have so many material desires sitting in my heart. And then by watching that powerful media presented in such alluring ways, so many more material desires come into my heart. So if you want to tell someone that, then you have to, and that's your service, you can tell them that. That, do you want to do this? Anyway, each, you know, we have all of our individuality and different ways of approaching problems and preaching to people and speaking to people and dealing with people. So, and if you have affection for them and if you're actually thinking of their welfare, then they'll probably hear you. But that wasn't what you asked me, was it?
Well, I guess the point is, you're helping me ask the question better, because the thing was, I was upset that I met this devotee, but then I let them loose in the temple, and other devotees take them to the movies, and I don't think that's actually the devotional service.
Yes, I would probably guess the same thing.
Don't go to the temple, you know, just they're locked up in a room and say Hare Krishna.
No, it's a problem you mean the devotees who are living in the temple were taking the new people to the movies?
Not the temple, but some of the devotees, there's a group in Sydney called Spiritual Seekers, they're kind of younger devotees, they don't live in the temple, some of them come every day and some of them come most nights to the restaurant.
This is too confusing for me.
they're a youth group, they're called Spiritual Seekers, and they kind of keep themselves a little bit from being full-on devotees, but they're kind of trying to bring in new devotees, and they kind of play cricket together, and this is another thing, another person was offering to work for ISKCON. I thought I should link them up with these Spiritual Seekers, and they invited to play cricket. And I was like, that's the best they can do for a social life, is cricket. So I sort of feel a bit like, so what to do to not be critical of these other new these devotees? Cause
first of all, do you play cricket?
No.
Okay.
I used there to.
You. Okay. Why don't you play cricket anymore?
Because I don't engage in mundane sports.
But why don't you play cricket anymore?
I'm just not attracted to cricket.
Okay, because you're not. If you were attracted, you'd play.
Well, there's probably a small part of you that is attracted, but I say don't play
cricket. Now we understand why you don't want them to play cricket. Okay, when that small part no longer exists, you'll be able to deal with them more easily, too. What right do they have to play cricket when I can't play cricket anymore? Because only... they should be, you shouldn't be playing cricket. But just... Also, we, you know, people sometimes go gradually to... be patient and affectionate to them. Were you good at cricket?
Not that good, not that bad. I liked it bad.
I bet you did. Now, but as far as I understand, the reason, even though you have, this is what the Bhagavad Gita says, param drisvan vartite, that if you, even if you have lower desires, like that, if we're getting a strong enough positive spiritual satisfaction, then we can give up effectively the lesser things. So these people don't have that, obviously, yet. Right?
Yeah, apparently. It seems, but
it's not criticizing, it's just descriptive. Because I don't even know who they are, but it doesn't seem like they have that. So sometimes... And actually, Prabhupada said about bringing up children, don't say no too often. Rather, emphasize the positive engagement. So, if they're having a very wonderful kirtan, and they're feeling so, the depth of satisfaction in their heart, then those lesser desires, which ultimately don't give so much pleasure, just doesn't really satisfy the heart. So, if they're getting true satisfaction, if the positive is emphasized, then they're more likely to be easily give up those things. So, we learn gradually that positive engagement is the thing. Positive, the positive, the positive. Because if you're always telling someone you shouldn't be doing this, and you shouldn't be doing this, and you shouldn't be doing this, and you shouldn't be doing that, what will be the result?
Thank you very much.
that's one result. Another is they'll probably end up doing it anyway. So, anyway, you know, it's a little simple but complicated points on human psychology.
For a Bhaktivinoda member, if we tell them that you shouldn't worship demigods and you should not think Krishna is not. Sometimes some people think Krishna is impersonal. Tell them they won't be anybody in the world. They won't go. Very careful.
So what do you tell them?
So we be very careful. We say, or after in case any Christians come, I tell Krishna and Jesus are the same. So we are not telling that you shouldn't worship Jesus. So Krishna and Jesus, Krishna is an incarnation. Jesus is an incarnation of Krishna. Krishna is the original and Jesus is an incarnation. So like that only I tell. I'm very careful with telling
them. Very careful. But you also have to get the philosophy right.
Later, after they come.
But see, it's... Because Jesus is not actually an incarnation, he's a Saktavesha. Yeah, okay. But what I would like to say is that there's different ways to do these kind of things. And one way is you just say, why don't you read Prabhupada's books? And then Prabhupada will do all that work for you. And you be nice to them, and you don't have to be very heavy with them. And then you ask them. And that's why the basis of the programs, the Bhakti, should be Prabhupada's books. And, you know, systematically reading parts of Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada covers everything very carefully there. And then you ask them, as you're reading, write down any questions you have. And then when they ask you a question, then you answer it in a philosophical way. In a simple philosophical way.
Krishna was also helping us. Like one Christian person, he came to our Bhakti Vishnu. He had diabetes and he got cured. He started chanting and he got cured of diabetes. He was telling us it's a miracle. Then he started coming regularly to the temple.
Krishna has his ways. Any other questions or comments? Because now it's 1:15.
How do we deal with, about the movies? We just heard the exchange about movies and we don't have a positive engagement, then the mind gets attracted to such things. So, how do we deal with children? Because we do take other care to see some 3D movies, like some documentaries and something like that. So, so that we have an outing with them and we spend some time with them. So, we do take them to the movies and we do, take him to parks or some adventure parks and all these things. So,
yes.
So, is this right approach, or what should be our approach
in this matter? Well, for a question about in my particular family, what standards should we keep? That's better to ask that personally or privately. If S is a general principle, should we have a television in our house? Of course, it's better not to have a television in the house. But then someone says, well, you just said I shouldn't have a television in my house, but when we don't have a television in my house, all my son just complains, all my friends have televisions, and then he wants to go over to their houses, then what should I do? But anyway, there's the general principle and the specific application of the principle. And for the specific application of the principle, you have to go to a doctor. To find out how to apply it in my circumstances. So, I didn't answer your question specifically. Yes?
If something is a relative concern, you could do it this way, you could do it that way, then usually there's something kind of, you have to keep balancing it up. It's not like you get a statement and say, this is how you do it, but at this particular stage, maybe you should favor doing this, and then later you favor doing
that.
So it's quite a dynamic thing. You can't answer that.
It depends how the patient is reacting to the medicine, too. But another practical thing is the people who you really should talk to, you find some good devotees who you trust who are in a similar situation that you're in and who are dealing with it possibly, and their children are growing up nicely. So those are the people who can give you very practical advice also. you see someone whose children are growing up very nicely, and you ask them how they've done it, you know, to share some of their realizations and practices with you, and how they make these decisions. And people who are in your situation, you know, just a little bit, the children are older, and you see that they're doing well, things like that. Another very valuable point of guidance, you know, the seniors, elders. Okay. Enough?
One more of this.
Yes.
I was really mentioning how Arjuna heard directly from Krishna, and we can have similar representatives in terms of practical service, and you have developed that strong faith that will bring the pain, and you lose all the deliberation of the mind and the confusion, and you can follow very faithfully. In terms on a local level, dealing with, you know, we have our local temple head and our self-management and things like that, we take it for granted usually that that's coming from Krishna, all the instructions on practical service and passive requirements.
Well, the thing that is very, very simple in it is that Krishna wants the temple to be maintained, the deities to be worshipped, books to be distributed, prasadam. That's clearly Krishna's desire. Mm-hmm. So if we can fit somehow or another, needs money, so donating money. So in general, as a general principle, if we can fit ourselves happily and peacefully into satisfying one of Krishna's desires, then all is well. Now, the question is, when a temple authority, I think this is what you're asking, is asking us to do something very specific, and we want to know if this, according to who I am, is specifically going to be pleasing for Krishna. Right?
Is that right? Also, in terms of, Madhavi was asking, when we have a propensity to criticize others and we get criticized by others, seeing that as coming from Krishna also.
Well, if you can digest it, you can. If you're powerful enough, spiritually pure enough, and spiritually pure enough, then you'll see everything coming from Krishna. But this is a very exalted platform. And one can't imitate, and shouldn't try to imitate. Yeah, an advanced devotee lives in the mercy of Krishna. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita in one of Prabhupada's purports. He's living in Krishna's mercy. He's just seeing Krishna's mercy coming to him throughout his life. But this is an exalted platform, and we shouldn't imitate that. So if we're not on that platform, we have to be practical. So, but that wasn't your question exactly.
No, just in terms of practical service. Or
so I think that that question that really it sounds like you're asking is, what is the best service for me to engage so it's pleasing Krishna?
Well, you can hear from to hear from Krishna directly would be wonderful. You could be free from the doubt completely. Certainly you can, if you're Bhagavad Gita, etc. And then you have your spiritual master who you have much more, a lot of deep faith in. And then, then you have his representative on your local level. And sometimes the instruction can be superficially different. And do you also accept that as coming from Krishna?
So therefore, yes. See, instead of making a general principle which you're asking about, but which you're not really asking about, if your real question is personal, what should I be doing now at this particular time in my life that will be pleasing to Krishna at this particular time and place? If that's really what your question is, you know, and who should I accept authoritatively like that? Well, the first person you should discuss with is your spiritual master. Because you have to have faith, as you said, deep faith, that this is Krishna. telling me that. So if I've understood you correctly, it was actually a personal question, then that's the place where you should start that. Have you asked him that?
Yes.
Okay. Has that cleared up?
Yes and no. There's more to about
that. Yeah, well, that's it. And I understood that. Yeah. I understood that. So, you know, these things are, you know, personal questions, how to apply the principles. They're not for general classes. Then you have to go to those, you know, there's no use going to someone who you don't have faith in either to ask the questions. You know, you have to go where your faith is deepest. Because if you ask someone who you don't have faith, if you don't like their answer, if it doesn't agree with what you think, of course you have to find a doctor who tells you, who's going to tell you what you want. You're healthy, you have no problem. So you don't want to do that either. So you go to someone, who you will accept their answer. But you should make sure you get guidance from your spiritual master on this. That's what I would say. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.